flown around the world in a plane designed the latest IBM brain. But lately I'm so downhearted, 'cause I can't get started with you. In Cincinnati or in Rangoon, I simply smile and all the gals swoon. Their whims I've more than just charted, but I can't get started. Oh, tell me why am I no kick to you? I who'd always stick to you. Fly through thin and thick to you. Tell me why I'm taboo each time I chance to see Franklin D. He always said hi, buddy, to me. And with queens I've a la carte, but I can't get started with you.
Frank Sinatra from the No One Cares album on Capitol label. This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our regular public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Hello there, loyal listeners. This is Jay Koronik with you for the next hour of the new WHFR Journal for June the 6th, 2008. And we're very happy that you could tune in to find out the latest things that are happening, well, maybe right next door, which, of course, hey, they matter the most to you, don't they? They certainly would have the greatest impact possible. And so we're going to be covering the local and area news from the Dearborn Times Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide. And each of them do publish two papers a week. We do always recommend that you try to not just buy copies, but subscribe, pass them around, talk about the local events. You won't find local events covered anywhere else in the papers as well as your local papers. And we don't mean the Detroit News and Free Press. They just don't touch on this stuff like it's not important. Of course it is. It's very important. And as someone reminded me last week, it's the place, these are the issues that you actually can make a difference about. Yeah, you, one person, maybe with a couple of your friends, can make a difference, more have more of an impact in changing policy or getting something new going for something that's local by just going to your school board and maybe standing up and making a comment or making a phone call or going to a city council meeting, writing a letter. You can have a lot more impact in making things happen the way you think they should happen, for the good of all, of course, just by focusing on local events. So never leave local things out. That's not only the most important, they have the biggest impact on you every day, perhaps, but also you've got the biggest chance of influencing them and changing them, maybe, and introducing new things. So keep that in mind. So I expect to be joined in a few minutes by a co-host from our WHFR staff. Drive carefully out there, co-host. The first story is actually a press release from the Dearborn, Chamber of Commerce it comes from. Farmers Market comes to Dearborn. They worked this out. The Dearborn Chamber of Commerce will host a farmer and artisan market in Dearborn during the 2008 market season. So the open markets, the so-called farmers markets, like the Eastern Market in Detroit, usually when it's time to plant flowers and so on, they get started. Last week, I was not on the show, and I do want to thank Susan Morrell and Ned Apigian for covering and doing a fine job with the WHFR Journal. If you listen to that, I was in Traverse City, Michigan, and they had a farmer's market, and always do, on Saturday morning. And it was more flowers than it was edible food, because the growing season hasn't really gotten started yet up there too much. But although their cherry festival comes up July, of course. Like cherries, there are cherries everywhere up there, freeze-dried, whatever it takes, but they're still selling cherries 24/7. Nonetheless, we're going to have one outdoors, a first, and it says Friday's July 11th. So the food should start growing and ripening by then, certainly. July 11th through October 10th. From 9 in the morning to 2 p.m., that's right during this show, thanks a lot, folks, local farmers, artisans, and other vendors will offer their wares to the public. The market will be located between the two parking decks behind West Village Commons, between Tenney and Howard. Might as well do it in the parking decks, folks, because there's not that much going on there. Hardly anyone parks there anymore, so why not just do it on the inside the parking decks, shelter from the sun and all that. Oh, well, the event is sponsored by Henry Ford Medical Center Fairlane. Maybe to rent the tents or something? I bet they'll have an info booth down there about all of their services and their doctors and so on. Dearborn Chamber President Jennifer Knott Gehring, that's K-N-O-T-T, Gehring, or Gearing, G-I-E-R-I-N-G. She said, "We know this market will positively impact Dearborn on many levels. It will offer an additional green-friendly, healthy service to customers. Imagine fresh food grown locally. Imagine. What a concept. I'm sorry, I'm old enough to remember that that's the way it used to be. Didn't have our food shipped in from halfway around the world with preservatives and additives and colorations and all that kind of stuff. Freeze-dried, flash frozen, whatever it took to, you know, keep it from spoiling. Or maybe it is spoiled, it just doesn't look like it or smell like it, thanks to the perfume and the paint they add. It's a great idea. Maybe it'll catch on again. Green-friendly, healthy service. It will jumpstart area restaurants and businesses during the Friday lunch hour. You know, before or after lunch. Or maybe you'll buy a fresh apple or something and eat it while you're out there. And we'll give an opportunity also for local artists and entertainers to present their creations to a larger audience. The market will also be enhanced by children's activities and entertainment. Got to keep those kids busy after they're out of school, you know, starting July 11th again. And yeah, they say it's a perfect end to each week during the summer and fall. Too bad that the average person who has to work for a living can't get there at that time on a Friday. But, hey, over here at Henry Ford Community College, we have a four-day work week. Good for us, huh? Well, saving energy, saving money. Students get their classes without having to come so many days a week. Usually they just come twice a week for 3 hours each time. But nonetheless, they get Fridays off too. So, hey, Henry Ford Community College staff, not WHFR staff, though, we can get over there on Fridays pretty easily from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's when it's going to happen. So it's in the West Dearborn area between the two parking towers. It's going to be outdoors. between the two parking decks. It'd be behind West Village Commons, and that is just south of Michigan Avenue, of course. So put that on your calendars. Something to do if you've got Fridays available, and fresh food and vegetables. Of course, we do have two fine markets in Dearborn, one on Outer Drive, and Monroe. Is it Monroe and Outer Drive? And the other one on Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn that do have some. One has more local fresh-grown stuff than the other, but both of them have very, very fine wares, and they're not the big chain stores that generally don't have much local food in them. The food may look good, and it may be good. What do I know? But it's from thousands, and if not tens of thousands of miles away. Additives, preservatives, no extra charge. No surcharge, anyway. It's all folded in. Anyway, if you are interested in sponsoring or participating in this exciting venture, obviously I'm reading from the press release, please call 313-584-6100 or just go online to the DearbornChamber.org. Dearborn Chamber, that's the Chamber of Commerce, DearbornChamber.org. And if you're an entertainer or a local farmer or an artisan, you could be part of that. So we turn to the papers from the last week. We'll see what's going on. I just had a small comment. Last week you heard that the recall of Representative Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights did fail. They turned in more than double the required number of signatures, and a whole bunch of them, 60-70%, were invalid. Definitely vote fraud, some homeless people's names, people that weren't registered. And we heard along the side, I'm not sure this came out last week, that they paid people to collect signatures. And this is typical in every petition drive. It is hard work. You have to be outside in the weather, you know, sunny, whatever. You have to confront people a little bit saying, would you like to sign this petition? And you had to talk to people. Typically, I found out that you would get paid $2 per signature for gathering signatures for one petition or another. So maybe you don't even care about the issue, but if you're just working for a living and that is a job to do and they want to hire you sort of like freelance part-time to do that, they'll pay you $2 per signature. I hope to get their money back because we understand they paid $6 a signature and over half of them were invalid. And they did not make, I think the number was 5,000 or was it 8,000? 5,000 had to be validated or 8,000 in order to get this on the ballot. So that will not happen, but they got a pretty bad deal from whoever it was that did the job. And I wonder if they can sue that person or persons or a company that they hired. It's very tough. I mentioned to you the Michigan, to get petition drives going, to put it on the November ballot, and this was going to go on the August ballot, this recall, the November ballot statewide too, costs more because you need more signatures on the petition. The Michigan Fair Tax people, and I've talked about this before, it's a way to replace our income tax in Michigan by adding 4% more to the sales tax, and then that's it. And also there'd be prebate checks coming back to everybody every month so that the people in the lower economic levels, even though they have to pay tax, 10% on, I think, even food and drugs, they get a check back in the mail. Okay. And so there doesn't have to even get this. There's no state withholding then. You know, money you don't even know is being taken out of your check, withholding not just to the federal government but to the state government in sort of building up an escrow fund, if you will, so that when you have to pay your state or federal taxes, the money is like already there, and you don't have to come up with new money. So what a convenience. They get to use that money and earn interest on it along the way, which you don't get at all, even if you later, for some reason, are able to get a lot of money back through deductions or something. Well, the Michigan Fair Tax proposal, they need 350,000 more signatures before the first week in July. I'm not sure which date. I have highly recommended, and of course my opinion is that of mine only, not necessarily of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, or administrators or students, but we hope so. Just lost my glasses here. Can't see a thing without my glasses. Help! Help! Okay. Okay, there's a microphone. Hi. Okay. Oh, jeez. Radio is tough. They're trying to get the legislature to do the right thing and just vote to put this on the ballot. So you can decide, doesn't, you know, so, but of course, voting to put it on the ballot does mean that those elected representatives are kind of endorsing this. And a lot of them don't want to be on the record for endorsing something that's so different. It is a fine idea whose time has come nationally and locally. It gives us a specific way to eliminate the Internal Revenue Service and even the Internal Revenue Service activities on the state level. No more withholding from your checks. You get all the money from your check, at least in terms of the state, if this passes. No state withholding. And no calculation of income tax. No forms to fill out. That's right, at the end of the year. It's all based on consumption. Now, of course, if you're not consuming anything, this is the only negative I heard. If times are bad, then you're not going to buy as much, and the state doesn't have much money. And there are some basic services we have to keep going all the time, although a lot of people think we've got too many basic services right now the state's doing. And we've mentioned this in the past, that this needs to be reviewed and looked at. Do we really need all of these state services? Is there some other way we can operate government more cheaply and a smaller government, wiser government? The fair tax provision statewide, nationally, if it is my humble opinion, if it would pass, and it's been well thought through, there's books written, there's websites, go and find out about it. It would be, you know, much better for all of us, I think, in the long run. Besides, we consume too much anyway. And we should do more for ourselves anyway, rather than let government do it for it so badly and so expensively. And I sound like a raving conservative here, which I'm not. Not even raving. I'm not even conservative. I am raving. Okay. Probably 350,000 signatures at $6 each. That's not going to happen. Or at $2 each, that's not going to happen. So I guess it won't be on the November ballot unless your elected representatives who are already there in Lansing will vote yes on the bill to put it on the ballot. Maybe you ought to call Gino Polidori and or send him an email in this area, or Representative Dillon, and say, we want this. We want this. It would change a lot of things, but, you know, we need to try this. And it would make them humble, too, to know that you're listening and paying attention to such stuff. Okay, first topic I want to cover from last Sunday, June 1st, Downriver Sunday Times. The DCC, what is that? The Downriver Community Conference is seeking $100,000 in federal money to explore the idea of installing wireless internet capability in its 20-member communities as a means to attract new business. Well, it's Allen Park, it's Dearborn Heights, it's Ecorse, Flat Rock, Gibraltar, Lincoln Park, Melvindale, River Rouge, and so on and so forth. Almost all the local and Downriver communities are part of the Downriver Community Conference. Yep. Here's a quote. Oakland County was a little behind the time, said Paula Boris, but they are creating that option. Paula Boris is the DCC's economic development director, who said the money would come from an appropriation for a pilot demonstration project by the U.S. Congress and be used to pay for a study of wireless implementation strategies. She said, we're competing for business. To have something like this makes us a more level playing field, unquote. Whether the project study moves forward depends on congressional approval. Boris says she doesn't expect to hear anything until October, the turn of the new federal fiscal year. Do you know that it's not July 1st or even January 1st? It's October 1st. Because they can't get their act together over the summer to work on this stuff. Why don't we just have a part-time legislature? You know, we kind of do anyway, don't we? And we are competing with communities nationwide for the money. But Oakland County could be wireless by the end of this year. And some cities already offer the service. I've suggested Dearborn just go ahead and do it. Of course, Dearborn is probably waiting to see if the money will come in so the whole group will get to do it together and it won't cost them anything, and so on. Okay, well, so that's the story from the Sunday Times. We'll see how that goes. I am in favor of wireless for the community. I think it's one of those services government should provide to everybody. It's true. If you don't have a computer, you're still stuck because you can't access the internet without a computer that is able to access the internet, wired or wireless or whatever. Wireless is usually possible with most laptop computers, but most stay-at-home plug-in home computers can get a wireless board or card pretty inexpensively. And then the service would cost you nothing. You understand? Oh, yeah, I know it goes through your tax dollars through government or whatever, but basically it'd be a lot cheaper than paying the extra $20, $30 or more dollars a month to a cable system or to a phone company. And of course, the phone company and the cable people are going to resist that like crazy. They're going to get their lobbyists together, and they're going to say, no, 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 not ever. Don't let that happen. It's not good for business, blah, blah, blah. Yes, it is good for business, as Oakland County knows. Okay. Welcome to Physics Professor Donald Board. That's B-O-R-D. He's been named Interim Provost. He's actually been there at U of MD for a while. He's a professor of physics and astronomy at the University of Michigan Dearborn, right next to us here at Henry Ford Community College. And he has been appointed the new provost. And that's equivalent to being like the head, almost like a president. But it's, you know, all the U of M sort of like, they're not satellite campuses, but the U of M is in Ann Arbor. That's like the big time place, right? And there's only one president of U of M, and they're the Ann Arbor head, but they're also sort of, I guess, over these provosts at U of M Flint and U of M Dearborn. Is there another U of M somewhere in Michigan? Only the two other ones, I think. So, and we'll just end with a bad pun here. We hope that new provost board will not really be bored. Sure, he'll be very, very busy. And he does say that he's going to try to enhance public outreach programming in collaboration with Henry Ford Community College, whatever that means, enhance outreach programming. Okay, moving on. Boy, we go right through the topics here so fast. This is unfortunate news from the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. More layoffs. Dearborn Public Schools, and this really boggles my mind. I get boggled frequently, usually once a year, by this same story. It's like they just reprint it each year. Each year, the Dearborn Public Schools, and I know they hire some back, but they lay off 60 to 150 teachers. I mean, at this point, after 5 years, and this has gone on and on and on each year, do we have any teachers left? I know we got more and more students. What the heck is going on here? Well, they don't have the money. The layoffs are part of an attempt, as it says in the story here in the Press and Guide, to remedy a possible $6.3 million deficit. And current superintendent Artis has said that we're going to begin the process of recalling some of these individuals. But the difficulty is that the union contract is based on seniority, so we need to look at those people to bring back who will meet the students' needs. So if they need a science teacher, then they gotta coordinate that with the union, because maybe that person doesn't have the highest seniority and is next in line to come back, but they've got to be qualified, of course. You can't just bring back a phys ed teacher, no insult intended here, to have them teach science if that's classes that they haven't had enough coursework in, right? If they don't know enough about it officially, then it wouldn't be a good idea to do that. Funding coming into the state of Michigan for K-12 public schools. Where would it come into the state? From the federal government, folks. Well, it's fallen short. That's where the trouble has come in, not just the state of Michigan bad financial situation, but the money coming in is $300 million short for all K-12 public schools in the state of Michigan. And so that's how this deficit is there. So what's our federal government doing? What are they spending money on? Oh, excuse me, a couple of wars. Year after year after year against people who don't have any weapons of mass destruction, excuse me, against two countries that don't have Osama bin Laden in them, two countries that did not have any connection as countries with the 9/11 attack. And what year was that? Yeah, 2001, right. 2002? Well, how soon we forget. I don't even know what year it is. It's 5 years back. We started the war in 2003, okay? March of 2003. This amount of money for schools, for the supportive schools, to keep the teachers who are needed in the schools is such a small amount compared to what we spend one day in Iraq, that somebody has to turn this around, according to yours truly. We are not making things better in Iraq. Okay? The killing, The murdering, the looting is still going on. Our troops are still coming back with mental problems as well as physical problems, like being dead. That's a major physical problem, although you don't care about it anymore once you're dead, I guess. It shouldn't be happening, according to yours truly. Okay? Never should have started if we would have known now what we knew then, according to, as you know, the new book from former press secretary of George Bush. It's a tell-all, and he's telling the facts, folks, because many of us who already did our research in 2003 knew that the president was lying to us. Not just exaggerating, not just misinformed. And now, the press secretary's book, which is Scott McClellan's book, he was lying. He was, it's called propaganda. He used the word in the book. He knew what he was doing. He had his reasons. They didn't have to do with weapons of mass destruction. They didn't have to do with going after the 9/11 people. He had his reasons. Oh, we don't have to go into that now. The schools. We got to save the schools. And this is the federal government's problem here. Okay. Now, maybe you say, well, the federal government shouldn't be putting money into our schools. Well, okay, then we'll do it locally. So you're going to vote for higher taxes, folks, to help save the schools? You might have to next year. The district still doesn't know what they're going to do, but they're going to have, they've already said 120 are going to be laid off, and they think maybe they'll get down to only laying off 62, but they needed every one of those people this year, and they lost 60 or 100 last year and the year before because of the same sort of excuses, not enough money from the state, not enough money from federal government, blah, blah, blah. How can we have schools without teachers? I mean, how is this possible? I mean, this is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. As our schools go, so goes the nation. So goes our city, our state, our country. You got bad schools. You got no teachers who are qualified, and too many students per teacher. And it's doom and gloom, folks. And I know you're looking at your pocketbooks now and thinking things are bad enough. But this is the future, folks. And this is what's happening. Okay. Moving right along. Let's see. Ah, yes, there is a story. It's in two papers here. But it's first in Wednesday, Dearborn Times Herald on the front page. Crash claims life, shocks others. We don't usually do crime news or death news. Just a cautionary tale here, though. And a sad one, of course. A carefree cruise for four Dearborn High School graduates and friends ended tragically early Sunday morning, leaving one dead and two hospitalized. John Cruz, 19, Timothy Dooley, 20, Michael Staley, 20, and Brian Freddie Hendricks were traveling in Cruz's silver 1989 BMW, purchased just days before, along a winding section of Fairmont in Dearborn Hills neighborhood. Since I'm quite familiar with BMWs, they are fine performing cars, not just performance cars, that can get out of control. You know, too much horsepower for the weight and the size, and it's on the wrong wheels. BMWs are very good at stopping fast, swerving, avoiding accidents. Yes, they will go fast, though, if you want them to. But if you're a good driver, and you're not drunk or otherwise impaired, they're one of the best cars that you could be in. Personal opinion, BMW stands for best motor cars in the world. Okay, personal opinion. Okay. In fact, in my trip in my BMW to Traverse City and back, I have just a small BMW, not real small, though. 29 miles to the gallon, folks. 29 miles to the gallon. So, you know, performance cars don't have to get 12 miles to the gallon. So these people, obviously, as it says in the story, first of all, it was 1:49 a.m., and unless you've taken a few naps during the day, folks, I think you're kind of tired. So the impairment, even if you're young and vital, you still need sleep, folks. Shouldn't drive when you're sleepy. That's the first rule here. Are you writing this down? Don't drive when you're tired, when you're sleepy. Okay? You can't control the car well. Of course, it's a new car, and they didn't really know its capabilities for handling and stopping. Okay? You shouldn't drive your car, your new car, whatever it is, too much to the extremes, to the limits, for a few months. You should gradually, in a safe way, at a safe time, explore what those limits are for braking. How fast will it brake? How fast a corner will it take? Yep. Here's what it goes. Staley, who was sitting in the passenger seat wearing a seatbelt, broke his scapula, whatever that is, and suffered several lacerations as well as bruised ribs, bruised lungs, and a concussion. He was treated at Oakwood Hospital Medical Center and was expected to be released last Tuesday. Cruz was treated for minor cuts and bruises before being released and was also wearing a seatbelt. Hendricks and Dooley sat in the back seat. It's unknown whether they were wearing their seatbelts. Hendricks was transported by emergency personnel to Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit with a broken pelvis and a hairline fracture in his spine. He is expected to make a full recovery. Dooley, who was sitting behind Staley, was hurled through the windshield of the sedan when it struck the tree. Okay, principle number two here. In the back seat, wear a seatbelt. Okay? Because when the car stops and you don't, you'll find yourself, very likely, the front seats are not going to stop you. You'll fly right past them into the front windshield. Okay? So just because you're in the back seat doesn't mean you shouldn't wear seatbelts. So tell people. Spread the word. Okay? And he suffered extensive injuries, and paramedics pronounced him dead at the scene. That was Dooley. Police have yet to determine the cause of the crash, but suspect alcohol. Rule number three, don't drink and drive. Don't drink alcohol and drive. So they're tired. They're not wearing the seatbelts in the back seat. They're inexperienced with their new car. Okay? And the driver, at least, they suspect was drinking. And they're still, of course, I'm not saying that did happen. I'm not casting aspersions here that aren't true. This is the statement in the paper. This is just a suspicion. They're running detailed blood alcohol tests. We don't know. They were awaiting results at press time. Okay. I also want to reflect on where did they learn how to drive? Now, of course, driving reckless, no matter where you learned, if you're reckless, you just forget about everything you learned. But there are some driver ed programs that are better than others. I learned, get this, in the schools. This was the olden days when the schools used to have driver ed programs. I know they were expensive. I know they were time consuming. But they did a good, I had a whole semester in the classroom. Okay. Part of my schedule for a whole semester, one class out of each day, 5 days a week. I was doing driving outside of class time with the teacher and two or three other students in the car. Every day we drove too. I'm sorry, once a week we drove, as well as 5 hours in class for a whole semester, like 16, 18 weeks, whatever. They don't do that anymore. You don't learn anything. You don't study anything about how to go through a corner, when to brake. Not only what are the highway laws and rules. And I think of the hours of practice I got. My daughter, I'm sorry to say, learned from an outside group, and she's a good driver. I gave her a lot of practice illegally on the highway myself. Unfortunately, I had to do it illegally because the class, they had some sessions. They talked, I think, 8 or 10 hours. And they did one or two circles around Fairlane Town Center. That was their driving experience. One or two times around the circle. No highway driving at speed. No parking instruction. Nothing. And, you know, I don't know how you ever pass your driver's exams. The state of Michigan has beefed up the exams, you know, and the driver's tests are in different ages and restricted permits and that. These people were beyond any sort of restriction. Like when I got my full license and could drive on the highway in the 60s when I was 16. That's dangerous. But I had a lot of hours experience in my high school driver ed class, as well as, almost 100 hours of classroom instruction about rules and procedures and elements of what a car does and what an engine does and what about traction and all kinds of information that you need to know, because these things are dangerous weapons. These are weapons of significant destruction, if not mass destruction. That's cars. And we need to be properly trained and licensed. And I think it should go back in the schools. I'm sorry. All of these other little groups on the side, most of them do not do much instruction. They do the minimum. They take hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars from you, and they just don't prepare people. Now, reckless is reckless. Drinking is drinking. Being tired is being tired. And don't let that happen. It's just that simple, whether you had a good driver ed class or not. Don't let it happen. Okay. Boy, I'm really on my lecture podium here. A good thing that's pointed out here about motorcycles. I know that a lot of people are considering buying a motor scooter or a motorcycle as alternate transportation. Many of these will get more than 50, well, a few will get more than 50 miles to a gallon of gas, usually regular gas, sometimes premium, though. Most of them do get at least 30, if not 40 miles to a gallon. Now, that's not a lot more than some cars. As I said, I went to Traverse City on highway driving, you know, continuous, smooth driving. And if I took Frank Bewick's suggestion from a few weeks ago in his 30 plus 1 column and drove 55, I tried that for a few minutes, Frank. My new car actually has a mileage meter, a miles per gallon meter on it. And I found out, and you're right, if I would have done, well, not 55, that's just too slow for me, 58, I would have gotten 43 miles to a gallon if I wouldn't have gone slower ever. You know, just instantly stop, instantly start. If I would have cruised, because gasoline engines are most efficient at about 25, 2600 RPM, okay? And so if I would have cruised at that speed, I would have gotten 43 miles to a gallon. So, you know, I think although motorcycles cost a lot less, you can get a nice motorcycle that gets more than 50 miles to a gallon for about $3,000 to $6,000. Motor scooters, also in that range, starting in that range. I personally think a motorcycle is a safer device than a motor scooter because of the way you sit on it, and so balance issues, size of tires, amount of tread connecting with the pavement. That's a big thing for me, and I have ridden a motorcycle in the past. I do have a motorcycle endorsement on my license, and so I know what I talk about here. It is an option in good weather, certainly, although I rode mine in bad weather and didn't have any trouble. But I went through a motorcycle safety instruction course. Yeah, sort of like driver's ed for motorcyclists. Absolutely essential. Should be required. Now, the state of Michigan will put you through a little teeny course down in Wyandotte, the Secretary of State's office for the motorcycle endorsement. In their back lot, you go like 3 miles an hour around some pylons, and then they let you go crazy on the highway. That's not right. Nonetheless, you need a good training course, and the schools don't do it on a regular basis. I mean, just like they don't do driver instruction for cars anymore. But this is good, and this is the national organization, the National Motorcycle Safety Foundation, and they put together this course, which I took myself in learning how to ride years and years ago, and it really works. And two sections are going to be offered starting on June 16th. So the classes are Monday through Thursday nights from 5:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., and they run, again, June 16th to 26th, and then the next one is July 8th to 17th, and then August 11th to 21st. They're part of our Center for Lifelong Learning, or CL2, and they are really, really good, well-taught, well-thought-out. Again, they've been doing it for 40 years, and so it's 16 hours of instruction, and the $25 cost is non-refundable. So if you back out early, I'm sorry, they don't give it back. It's only $25 for 16 hours of instruction. You must be available for the entire stretch of time, but will be assigned a range time on the Friday meeting. Whatever that means, range time. Okay.
And I'm a graduate of it.
Oh, wait a minute. We have Ned Apigian, our co-host, arrived in the studios. Go ahead, Ned.
Showed up late.
No, it's fine. Thank you for getting here.
Anybody want a lesson in what to do with flowers and plants?
Not right now. Let me finish the motorcycles, and we'll talk about your fun today. in beautiful Gros Isle.
Yes. Beautiful. Okay. Gros. I hadn't been there in a dog's age.
Okay. So we'll get to that. Thank you, Ned, for getting here. I'm glad you got here safely. We've just been talking about car safety and motorcycle safety both. And for motorcycle safety, folks, and it is a viable option, doesn't cost as much as a new car. I'm not sure that a new young driver is best set for motorcycles. I think cars are more protective if you get into trouble, and hopefully you've taken proper instruction. Never start riding a motorcycle or a motor scooter without instruction. Okay? I know from what I talk. That is the worst thing that we let happen here in Michigan in terms of highway safety. So this course is going to happen here. They're conducted with state funds from a motorcycle safety grant. They will teach participants how to properly turn, shift, and brake a motorcycle. Some motor scooters are automatic transmissions. There is an automatic transmission motorcycle that Honda makes, but it's only sold in Japan.
Really?
I can't figure that out. I mean, what's wrong with getting an automatic transmission motorcycle here, as I said, Ned, before you slid
in. Does Harley Davidson have one?
No, they're all shifting types. You know, you have to take your foot, the tip of your right foot, if I remember, and click up and, or is it left foot? The right foot is for braking, I think. Left foot is for shifting. Yeah, up and down with your left toe. Anyway,
seems awkward.
I haven't ridden a motorcycle for 20 years now, folks, but I was good at one, never crashed, and I took this course. After completion of the course and short written test, there's information you get out of it too, the Secretary of State will waive the writing skills test required for a cycle endorsement. You know, they take that little test down in Wyandotte that I described, that was a stupid little test anyway in order to get your motorcycle endorsement. In fact, the fellow that took his motorcycle endorsement right before me 20-some years ago in Wyandotte there, he finished the circuit. And they sort of surprise you and throw their hand up, and you're supposed to brake as fast as you can from 2 miles an hour. He pulled on the front brake only, the front wheel brake, and flew all the way over the handlebars. Wasn't hurt because it was only 2 miles an hour. And they gave him the endorsement. They passed him. And I'm thinking, that guy is going to be on the highway. He doesn't even know which is the rear brake that he needs to brake with both, front and rear.
Why do they have it set up like that on motorcycles?
Well, because you do have two brakes. There are some systems, ABS, it's called, on motorcycles where you're braking with
both.
One control, and you get a little bit of both, and it's modulated between front and back, as it should be.
Oh,
and that's, but you know,
that's the one.
They're more expensive. Those go to around $9,000 or $10,000 to get that feature. But you can learn how to apply, just like a lot of people ride bicycles. Maybe you do, Ned. No?
Okay. Not
bikes,
anymore.
Bikes have, on the handlebars, they have two brakes, one for the rear and one for the front. And if you ride a bike, it has brakes like that. You know, mostly you want to use the back brake.
But you use them both at the same time.
You do, but more for the back brake than the front. If you use the front too much, you'll fly right over the handlebars, you know. So, anyway, how do you get in touch with the Center for Lifelong Learning, Henry Ford Community College? If you or a loved one or a friend is thinking of getting a motorcycle, or maybe already has a motorcycle or a motor scooter, almost the same issues here, folks, let them go through this. Now, participants must be at least 15 years old. They must be present for all the classes. Riders must supply their own Department of Transportation-approved motorcycle helmet, eye protection, full-finger gloves, dirty over-the-ankle boots, heavy-duty pants, heavy-duty long-sleeve shirt or jacket, and rain or cold weather gear. Participants under 18 years old must bring a waiver signed by a parent or guardian on the first day of class. Now, what's missing there in that list? Motorcycles. They provide them. Nice, small motorcycles.
Really?
And so when you have to learn how to bail, I love this too. This was so much fun. You know, with a motorcycle, you don't want to crash into a brick wall because there's nothing to protect you, right? You're just going to hit the motorcycle's going to crumble. You're going to crumble. So if you're going to smash into something, you have to know how to jump off the bike.
Really?
How to, eject yourself off the back of the bike. And this is part of the class.
You mean the bike goes ahead and you kind of like...
that's it. You if you know you can't brake in sooner, it is better, since you're in all this gear, you got your approved helmet and that, to stand up on the foot pegs, bring your leg up onto the seat as you're standing up on the pegs, you're up high, and push yourself off the back just a little. And just because if you're with that motorcycle, you're not going to be in good shape when it hits. And of course, they have a mattress or a soft grass, and they only do it at like a couple miles an hour, and the motorcycle just sort of tips over, and you're off to the side. But if you practice once or twice, you understand that's what you don't hang on. You get paralyzed if you're going to really have a bad crash. You get the heck off the bike. And you say, well, I'll just sort of lean over. Yeah, then your leg gets scraped on the pavement, on the side that's between the motorcycle and your leg, and you might lose a leg that way. So very special skills are needed. You can learn them. I'm not saying it's safe for everyone if you're not in good physical shape, not real quick, or you got an impairment of some sort.
Is there an upper age limit?
No, not for the class. No, but I'm just saying you do have to, you know, be somewhat mobile and flexible and alert. Obviously, good eyesight and so on. That's true if you're driving a car.
How long was the whole thing? And it's free, you said?
No, it's $25.
Oh, $20. That's
yeah, but it's all the 16 hours of instruction, and the cost is $25. And it start the first one. The weekend course option will meet. Oh, the weekend course option. I see. Just a 2-day rather than the 5-day one is starting this weekend, starting June 6th. Oh, wait a minute. That's today, Friday.
Today.
Oh, it's starting today. So anyway, that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So anyway, go to the website, hfcc.edu/CL2 for College of Lifelong Learning. And or if you want to call 877, never heard that number before, 855.
I'm sure there'll probably be another weekend
5252. Well, the weekly sessions, yeah, they're going to be Monday through Thursday evenings, 5:30 to 9:30. And the first one of those weeknight classes, they start June 16th. Another one July 8th, another one August 11th. So there's a lot of time, even if you didn't get in the first weekend ones, there's still two more of those. So very serious about this, folks. I speak from experience. Motor scooters are getting more popular, and rightly so, at least for limited travel around town. But you got to be trained. You got to know how to do it. And this is the way to do it right here at Henry Ford Community College. It's not a big plug for the college, but nobody else is doing the Motorcycle Safety Foundation course in this area but Henry Ford Community College. So hfcc.edu/CL2.
That's got to make a big difference in your insurance, too, if taking a course like that.
Well, when you pass the class, Ned, you automatically get your motorcycle endorsement. The state of Michigan has approved the class, too. You don't even have to take another test with the state of Michigan.
Right.
And so you cannot, of course, ride on the highways without that motorcycle endorsement. So I don't know about a discount, but it does really get you ready for the highways.
It does for student drivers when you're taking driver ed.
That's true, yeah. And I already criticized the current state of driver ed, I'm sorry to say, but okay. Well, as long as you're here, yes, tell us about... now, you're an architect by trade, by profession, and you've done residential and commercial enterprises. And tell us about landscaping. I actually have something to say about grass cutting here if we get it in today.
Oh, well, that's...
But tell us what you were looking for some bushes or flowers at Groseal?
Well,
what was that?
Just a little education for the average person. So I had some landscaping done at my home for the last 2 years, and... Usually the landscapers, whoever they are, guarantee that the product will survive a year.
Yeah, if you save the receipt and take back the dead branches, if you can find the dead branches after a year.
Well, anyway, the problem is that the landscaping company has to go back to the supplier, and the supplier has to be convinced that the product that he has sold needs to be replaced. It seems to be a common industry standard. I have a different person that does landscaping service at my home, and I was and he could see that the arborvitaes that were planted in my home did not survive.
The vital arbs were not vital anymore. Yeah.
I guess that's from Latin. I guess.
Yes, it's a little pun on the actual
their
Latin
survivability.
Meaning, but
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, but in Michigan, it's true. I got some great shade-loving plants and just put them in a few weeks ago, and either it was still too cold or something, they all died. They died in the first week. And I can't even find them. They're all withered. And like, what do I take back to the florist shop? You know, to the nursery.
Well, when you use a contracting firm, they usually
they remember what they put in. Right. Yeah. Okay.
And they so in any event, all 9 of my arborvitaes, which are not cheap, died.
Oh wow!
They're
That's really
turned
bad.
To rust, and my wife was threatening me that if you don't get these things out, whatever it is.
Could be any. Could be too much water, too little, or a sudden freeze, or
too much wind from the
plague,
right place.
A plague or
whatever.
Something.
So anyway, my contractor has to go back to his supplier, and for some reason he called me and he said, "Do you want to come with me?" And I said yes, and I told him I would do it on Friday, but unfortunately, I slipped my mind that I was going to come and do the program. So I told him. I'm sorry I told you Friday, but if you want to do this, you better come at 8:30 in the morning. If this takes 3 hours, 4 hours,
And is it true, not trying to pass up any of the nurseries in closer to Dearborn, but Gros Eel does, I remember that I used to go down there for some big, beautiful trees and plants, and they have like whole fields of really beautiful stuff.
It seems.
It's just one nursery, I guess, but it seems like it's huge.
There's a company there, without giving their name, which might be not be correct.
Right. Well, no, we don't.
There is a nursery or a farm there that's been established in 1776,
right,
as I understand
it.
And my supplier had gone there to replace some of the things that were lost. Mm. And the idea was to take me with him so I could see. And the idea is this, the important thing for the listeners to understand when they're buying things. When you go to those big barn stores and the nurseries, you have to wonder where the stuff comes from. Mm-hmm. My contractor is very concerned that the stuff comes from Canada because of the zone we live in. Mm. Product grown down south and then shipped up here will not survive.
Probably won't. It's the wrong temperature range.
Right. So this is called Zone 5 here. And if there was a way to find out. So the arborvitae, he claims he's going to try to get replaced from Canada so that it might survive.
Right.
But interestingly enough, the guy that actually cuts my lawn says that he has so much difficulty with this guarantee that he will not plant that kind of material anymore because they don't seem to be able to survive.
Right. Well, that's what you keep trying. I keep, after being in my house about 20 years, 20-some years now, here in Dearborn, when something dies, I generally don't get the same thing again, I try something different, and about one out of three seems to stay.
Now, the advantage of the
alive
people
for a
like
couple years.
The product that comes from the Gros Points nursery or farm, that's product that's grown and raised here.
Same zone,
So it has. So this ability to survive has a lot to be concerned with that.
Yeah, and it's something to ask, although you don't know if they are telling the truth or not.
It's not labeled.
At the nursery, it's not really labeled.
Right.
And I imagine most nurseries would try to stock products that came from the same zone.
But I went to one of the
you don't
groceries.
Know about some of the big, huge stores around here, and I won't mention the names. But
right, there's several of them. Where they're getting the stuff from, you're not.
Right. Prices are low, but you don't know if it's
well,
going
to I did the same thing the other day. I went to my local grocery store, and I saw a couple things that were attractive. The price was so, I said, gee, I like the way this looks. Whether it makes it or not, it's worth $12.
My
patio.
Yeah, it'll last for a little while. Okay, about grass. Here it comes once a year, folks. Jay's philosophy of grass. Number one thing to remember about home grass is just to save energy and to save time and trouble and don't have any. Okay, that's the first rule. Don't have any grass. Well, my grandfather always said just pave it all over with concrete and paint it green. That's what he said. But that's no fun. That's not doing anything for the environment positive. We're not soaking up any carbon dioxide. No, in my area, and it is legal, folks, is to naturalize as much as possible, which means a combination of ground cover, bushes, shrubs. Yes, it's legal. Your front yard does not have to be a flat putting green, by edict or anything. The city of Dearborn does not want grass to be taller than 6 inches. That's the limit. They can give you a big-time ticket.
I think in Dearborn Heights, if it's 8 or 9 inches, they give you
That's more reasonable, I think. But my
ticket.
Point is that ground cover can be higher than 6. I mean, if it's an official, some sort of vines or myrtle or whatever, some
it's
of these
expensive.
Things, well, a little bit, but some of it naturally will grow bigger. In fact, I started some low-level vines as ground cover around my big oak tree in front, and it's covering most of the yard now. It's 4 or 5 years later, but it's and I have just grass around the outside edge, just a little trim. And I don't have to cut grass, in the front. And I've got, each year I find some, more recently I've been putting in bushes that flower. I've got peonies, I've got Knockout Roses, and don't hardly take any attention at all. So I only have to run my grass cutter over the grass on the outside edge like once every 2 weeks. And the ground cover does get up, you know, 6 to 8 inches high, but that's all legal because it's beautiful. And some, you know, if you want the more flowery kinds of ground cover, you can get that.
Well, it's true. Some of them flower in the spring anyways.
Right. Some of them only flower in the spring. Knockout Roses, I discovered, pretty much bloom all the way through the summer. They're little smaller roses, but they
keep going. They stay close to the ground. I had some
of them. Knockout gets about 3 feet high, my bushes. Oh. No, you might think of there's some other little miniature roses that stay closer.
It's almost like the juniper.
More like a ground cover. Yeah, you're right. Okay, if you got to have grass, though, folks, you say, Koronik, you're crazy. I got to have grass. I love grass. It's tradition. Just let it grow a little bit longer. 3.5 inches will help it to shade itself. You don't have to water as much, and it will be able to survive droughts more likely. Not 1 to 2 inches. Now, it's hard to find a lawnmower that will set for that high. Most of them will only go as high as 2.5 inches. But if you look around before you buy a new lawnmower, whether it's a push mower, a gas mower, electric mower, get one that all the way up is about 3.5 inches and continue to cut at that height. You know,
that's what happened at my house today. I swear to God, that's what they did, because I told them.
Even if you
want to
keep cutting once a week, you want it to water as much and your grass shades itself, it's less likely to burn out. Okay, number two, use a mulching mower. Okay, what that means is, you know, all your clippings, you say, well, I put my clippings in a bag in the back, you know, and then I dump them in a trash barrel. Hey, that's organic stuff, folks. That's natural fertilizer for the ground. You want it to go back in the ground, but ground up finer. So a mulching mower, and you might need a special attachment, but some, like my electric mower, that's the way it comes. It mulches. Oh. It grinds up the grass blade so much, and then zoop, just drops them right down. You don't see any grass laying on top, cut grass on top. It's all, you know, pulverized so small that it just goes back down and becomes natural fertilizer. So you don't have to sweep up hardly at all. And electric, oh my goodness, no noise pollution, no gas pollution. You know, the most polluting gasoline engines are not in cars, they're in lawnmowers. And if everybody's out cutting, you know, every 4 or 5 days or every week from these little junky little it's terrible pollution going into our environment.
Two-cylinder engines, the two-cycle engines.
Well, they don't have those too much anymore. The ones where you have to blend the gas and the oil, that's not as common. Even motorcycles, there's very few that are two-cycle anymore just because of the confusion about how much gas to oil mixture, you know. So most of them are four-cycle. But it doesn't mean, they're super noisy. Wear headphones, folks. Wear ear protection. You know, you'll get deaf from that, and so will your neighbors.
You always know when it's Saturday morning.
My electric mower is so quiet. It's noisy, but it's like a third, a fourth the volume of my neighbor. I'm the only one on the block. This is for 20 years. I'm the only one with electric mower. Come on, folks. You know, well, you might get tangled up in the cord. You'll learn to not run over the cord. You'll learn not to be so stupid to spin around 3 times and strangle yourself, okay? Electric mower, you say, well, I can't. Yeah, Sears has one model. That's about it.
How much do they cost usually?
The one I use is $150.
What size blade are they? Are they usually small?
Mine's 22-inch. You can get it 14-inch wide. I've got a 22-inch one.
Oh, that's
I had to get mine. I looked in the paper. The closest dealer that has a brand name, what is it?
Black & Decker.
Black & Decker, yes. They're one brand of electric. I'd have to drive past Ypsilanti to buy one. There's no store, not Home Depot or anybody, that has these electrics, good ones. Some of them, I found one really cheap, like 14-inch wide electric, for $100 somewhere locally. But you want a nice mower that does the job, you know. I got mine from Amazon.com.
Oh, you didn't go to Sears. I thought you said you bought it.
No. Well, Sears does the model that they carry is a small one too. It's not. It's bigger than this.
How
Home
did you
Depot
know
one.
It was on Amazon? Doc?
Oh, I looked it up.
You Googled.
Do your
Amazon
research.
Oh, I see.
Amazon's got everything, you know. And so I got it in 3 days, and you know, and it's been. I've had the same one for 5 years now. So, and it just uses electricity, folks. No gas, no oil, no explosion, no fire hazard, not noisy, mulches, and sets for 3.5-inch high. So I don't understand, people, why you don't do this. What is it, not macho? You got to get out there and show how macho you are by pulling the cord and pouring the gas in and making all that noise. I don't know what it is. Get over it, folks. This is not that world.
How about the price of gas? Another gallon of $4.
Well, there you go. Just a few pennies to plug into electricity. So, of course, I recommend organic fertilizer and weed killer. Corn-based will not kill your neighbor's dogs, by the way, but it costs a little more. So if you got to use fertilizer, why don't you do the right thing and don't use hazardous chemicals?
Can you still buy a push mower?
Yes, push mower. I have one in the garage that I got. The problem is that my neighborhood has a lot of trees. It's an older neighborhood, and a lot of branches always fall down. And even with the best push mower, as fast as you can push, if a relatively small branch gets in there, boom, you're stuck. You got to stop and pull the branch out. It sticks. The branches will not be chopped up by a push mower. It's only if you have just nothing but grass, and you get going a good speed, and you just keep going. But smallest little branch and poop.
And then you
got to stop and pull it out.
How do you sharpen those blades? Professionally, you take it once a year?
No, you get a file, just like people do to sharpen blades on their regular mowers. You just run the blade, run the file back and forth across it.
When I had one, I used to do an annual service. They sharpen the blade.
Yes, you can do that.
If
anybody's around to do that with a push mower, it's hard to find people that will do that that tune-up anymore. So I have one, but I found, unfortunately, if someone wants to buy it, I'll give it to someone. No.
What do you think about lawn sprinkler systems? What's your attitude about that?
Well, again, with ground cover and that, and if it's not grass, you don't have to water hardly at all. So I don't believe in sprinkler systems because, it'll keep your grass green. If you only cut it to 1 inch height or 2 inches high, you got to have sprinkler systems, but then you need all the chemicals too. I just think it's one bad choice after the other to keep the bad choices going, And so if you can get over that look of the putting green 1 inch high that's essential to your life or you're going to die, your neighbor's going to laugh at you. If you can get over that, then you'll save energy and everybody will be healthier. And get this. This is my final comment here. We got to leave. Got to go on with our next show, our blues music show with Joanne Korchinska coming up now. This is my validation for my yarding. Oh, Joanne could get you started on yard care and landscaping, but she's got blues coming up right now. Joanne Korchinska just came in the studio. Yeah, but I have frogs in my yard. I have rabbits living in my yard. Why?
Those are the good signs.
I have a yard that is real, that is organic. Nature loves my yard. Okay? So just there. Ha! So there. Okay. Thanks, Ned, for coming in for this edition of the new WHFR Journal. And more local news and views next week from 1 to 2 p.m. Well, you're very welcome. We love having you. And Joanne Korchinska coming up now. This is the new WHFR Journal. And saying goodbye. And coming up right now, I'm going to start her theme. The heck with my theme. She's here. It's time.
And it's almost 2.
Yep. WHFR Dearborn, Highway 61.